Hey, this is your Fusion Funk Meister Barry Jackson here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And my guest today is a singer-songwriter and one of the originators of a group originally called The Five Chimes. And they changed their name in 1956 to The Matadors, and you came to know them as Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. He's written co-written several of the hits that the Miracles became famous for, such as Ooh Baby Baby, Going to a Go-Go, Tracks of My Tears, and many, many more. I want to welcome to the Tuesday Midday Medley, Mr. Pete Moore. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Barry. How about yourself?
I can't complain. I'm definitely happy now, given that I grew up, learned how to dance on things like Ooh Baby Baby and Baby Baby Don't Cry and
right.
Many of those hits. Hadn't been for the popularity of tunes like that, I'd have been a definite wallflower.
How about that? Yeah.
Well, now tell me, how did you get started? Deciding that this was something that you wanted to do.
Well, as you know, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and I always wanted to be a singer. And Smokey Robinson and myself, we kind of grew up together. I was 14, and Smokey was 13 when I met him. And we always aspired to wanted to be singers, and thank God it came true for us. And in 1958, Smokey and I graduated from high school together at a school called Northern High School in Detroit. I was 18, he was 17, and, we really wanted to be singers real bad. So one day, our baritone singer, Ronnie White, over at the Miracles, we were over at his house one day, and he said, "Look, I got somebody that wanted to audition us, and maybe, we could record a record." And we said, "Well, okay, great." So we went to the audition, and we had written 4 songs for the audition, because we wanted to show the person that we were auditioning for that we were capable of writing our own songs, So we started singing, and he stopped us on the first song, and he said, "Look," he said, "I think you kids are cute, you got a good sound, you got a girl in the group, and there is the Platters, and they have the same makeup as your group do." And the Platters was the biggest group in the country at the time. So he said, "You kids are cute, but I don't think you're quite ready. Come back and see me maybe in a couple of years." And we said, "Okay, sir." So we walked out of the audition. We were very dejected, of course, and we was on our way to our cars, and it was a guy at the audition listening to us, and we didn't know who he was. He never introduced himself or anything like that, so this guy that was in the audition, he ran out of the building, and he stopped us before we got in our cars. And he said, wait a minute, kids, I like you kids, and I'm looking for a group to manage. My name is Barry Gordon, okay?
Wow.
The founder of Boomtown. And, Smokey and I looked at each other, and we said, "Wow, that's Barry Gordy, man." And we knew who Barry was, because he had written all the Jackie Wilson's hits. That's Why, Reap the Teeth, To Be Loved. So we knew who Barry was. Now, this happened in 1957. This is before Motown was formed. And Barry became our manager, and, we started singing around Detroit. We were singing at high school dances to basement parties and stuff like that. This time, in the late 50s, in Detroit, music was in the air. We would sing on the street corners and stuff like that. So Barry became a manager, and we recorded our first record in 1958. It's a record called Got a Job. It was an answer to a record called Get a Job by the Silhouettes, which was the number one record. And back in those days, answer records were real popular, So although in spite of Barry writing all these songs for Jackie, he had wrote some other songs that were his. He didn't really have any money, At the time, he was working at the Ford Motor Company on the assembly line, trying to make it, He wasn't really getting any money from any of those songs, because back then, everybody was getting ripped off.
Mercy.
That was before the copyright statutes and things of that nature that would protect artists and writers. So we said, Barry, we want to record a record. Yeah. So he took us in the studio and we recorded the record. I got a job that I mentioned earlier, and it was a regional hit. You know, it was a hit in St. Louis, a hit in a couple of other cities across the country. So that got us out there. You know, and we didn't get any money for that song either, So he changed companies and we recorded a couple of other songs at a label called Chess Records in Chicago. And we recorded a record called Bad Girl. And Bad Girl was our first charted record. And we had changed our name to The Miracles from the Five Giants. And so we were like ecstatic. You know, said, damn, we hit the charts, man. This is great. Now, all of this happened before Motown was formed, but we didn't really get too much money for that song as well. So one day, Smokey called me up. He said, you know what, Pete, man, you know, say, we ought to talk to Barry and tell him to start his own company. And I looked at him. I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, so we had a group meeting, and a couple of days later, you know, Smokey talked to Barry, and he said, man, you need to start your own record company, you know, because we're not getting paid in no way, you know. So Barry said, well, you guys think enough of me for me to start a record company? And we say, we sure do. So consequently, he borrowed some money from his family. He bought two buildings on West Grand Boulevard, Detroit, and he formed the Motown Records in 1959. And, obviously, we were the only act he had at that point, you know, because the Miracles are the premier act of Motown. And so he managed us. We didn't really do that much. We're still singing around Detroit. I mean, we sang at the Apollo Theater first time we left Detroit and sang at a couple of other spots that were well known at the time. And, you know, so we came back to Detroit and Smokey called me up. He said, man, I didn't want this song. He said, it's called Shop Around. And so I went over to Smokey's house and he played it for me. I said, man, that's a hell of a song. I said, you need to show it to Barry. So that next day, he went to the company and sat down at the piano and he played the song Shop Around that he had just written. And he had wrote it for an artist called Barrett Strong. And Barrett, was kind of known at that point, more so than the Miracles, you know. So and Barry listened to the song and he said, you know, Smokey, you got I need to record this song. He said, I really like this song a lot. So he borrowed some more money for his family. We went to the studio. We cut this record, Chop Around, in 1960. And we did 54 takes of the song. It was very gorgeous. The founder of Motown was a perfectionist, you know. So it took us 54 takes to satisfy him that we had nailed the song, you know. And the very restrained piano on the song. One of the very few records in his career. He was a songwriter, but he was restrained pianos on it. So the song came out and it went through the roof, okay? And you got this new group, The Miracles. You got this new guy just formed his record company called Motown Records. And, this put us all on the map at that time. You know, gave Barry enough money to start signing the other artists, you know, Temptations, Diana Ross and Springs, Marvin Gaye, and, all the other artists there. And he was building his roster because he finally had enough money to increase the staff from just us. We were only acting first. Really the rest is history, you know. And the Miracles, Smokey and the Miracles, we started writing for the other artists. You know, we were staff writers at the time. And, you know, so we wrote a lot of hits for the other artists. You know, we wrote the Temptations first hit, for example, The Way You Do the Things You Do.
Oh, yeah.
My Girl. All of that stuff was written by Smokey and the Miracles, okay? And then we wrote Marvin Gaye's first hits, Ain't That Peculiar, I'll Be Doggone, One More Heartache. Kind of got Marvin off the ground at first, you know, before Marvin started writing for himself. So I'm very proud of the fact that we, the Miracles, had wrote these hits to get the other artists off the ground at Motown. And they ultimately became superstars in their own right, you know. So I'm kind of proud of that, my group and Smokey, you know, we kind of got the other groups off the ground. And then Barry called us one day. He said, I heard about this girl group that lives in the project. He said, I want you to go over and audition them. You know, so we went over, auditioned, and that was Diana Ross of the Springs was who he was referring to. It was before they was called the Supremes. They were called the Primates. So we auditioned them, and he said, these girls are really good. You know, so we went back to the company, and Barry said, well, how were the girls? And Smokey said, man, these girls are really good. You need to sign them. And that was the beginning of the Supremes career. You know, and I'm kind of proud of that as well, you know, that Barry wanted us to go and audition the girls, and then as a result, that was the beginning of Diana's Supremes career. So basically, that's how everything started, and the rest is history, so to speak, you know, but I look back at that, all of this stuff in retrospect, and obviously none of us thought Motown would be end up being what it is, you know. And we kind of got that company going before the civil rights, you know, because the company was formed in 1959, and the civil rights movement didn't start until the early 60s. And as a result, you know, we became real close to Martin Luther King. You know, he used to come by the studio, and him and Barry became friends, and you know, and Barry signed a contract with him that he would go around the country talking about civil rights. And this is a story that most people don't know about, you know, but Barry Gordy and Martin Luther King got very, very close. And of course, on his staff, there was, you know, Jesse Jackson. That's when we first met Jackson Jesse. And it was a lot of turmoil in America at the time, you know, but by us being a part of Motown, you know, and when Motown really exploded, it gave young black kids something to look up, you know, and that's one thing that we talk about even to this day, you know, because back then, black kids didn't have any black people to look up to, you know, and then when Motown blossomed, it gave them a chance to look at black people and see what black people could accomplish, and you know, so that was a good thing about Motown in those days.
Well, let me ask you, would you say that with the proliferation of acts and just music in general that was coming out of Motown, what do you think that did for to motivate the other record companies to seek black artists to add to their roster?
Well, let me say this. It motivated all the other black artists, okay? All of your, not only the Motown staff, obviously, we all became Hall of Fame, you know, let me say that. You know, Temptations, The Miracles, Marvin Gaye, Diana Ross of the Supremes, and Martha the Vandellas, we're all Hall of Fame. And having said that, we really influenced all the other black artists that came after us, you know, because they were really into the music of Motown. They really loved the artists of Motown, and the Motown artists and the Motown music had a hell of an effect on other artists that came behind us, you know. And the artists that came behind us became superstars themselves. Like, let me just say the OJs, say for example. I just picked them, you know. Artists like the OJs and other groups, the Shy Lights and all the other groups that became popular years later, we influenced all of those artists, and all of those artists loved us and what we did, and they kind of incorporated our music into their music, and they became superstars as well. You know, so to answer your question, the Motown sound had an effect on all of your major R&B artists that came after us. And then, of course, there was the Funk Brothers, the musicians, which revolutionized the whole industry. You know, Earl Van Dyke, you know, and all the other guys, Robert White, and all the Joe Messina, the musicians that made up the Funk Brothers, revolutionized the whole industry.
Absolutely.
All the musicians. You can hear stuff today being recorded by R&B artists and white artists as well. And you can hear some of the same licks and some of the same chord structures that the Funk Brothers was using back then.
Absolutely.
I'm going to share a story with you right quick. The first time the Motown Review went over to England, okay, which which was in 1965, and it was all the groups that I mentioned. It was Stevie Wonder, you know, Stevie had just joined. We brought Stevie to the company, by incidentally. The Miracles at the company, you know, he was 13. I don't want to get into that story, you know, but it was Stevie Wonder, the Miracles, the Temptations, and who else was on that show? Martha and the Vandellas. And at the time, the people in England didn't know who we were, you know, because Motown was just beginning to have records that hit the Billboard charts. So we was relatively unknown in England, you know. So when we arrived there in 1965 in the London airport, you know, we walked down the stairs from the plane, and it was about 800 people, a fan club, just cheering, you know. And we looked at each other. We said, wow, the fan club was for the Funk Brothers. How you like that? It wasn't for the Miracles or Temptations or, you know, the Island and the Supreme. It was a fan club for the Funk Brothers. And we all looked at each other. We said, wow, you know. But that'll give you an idea, the effect that these musicians had in the business at that time. And then, of course, you know, they influenced other music, all the musicians that came after them. And this is what I'm getting ready to say, okay, is unbelief. The Funk Brothers have played on more number one records than Elvis, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones combined.
Wow, wow. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. And it's no doubt that the Motown sound with the Funk Brothers, as well as the vocalist who they played behind, was and really still is a very distinctive sound. How do you compare that to, say, the Memphis sound? You know, with Steve Cropper on guitar, the Memphis Horns, and those artists that created the sound for Stax.
Well, the Memphis sound was a little different from the Motown sound. Although we had a hell of a influence factor with the Memphis sound as well, you know, because at that time, everybody wanted to kind of emulate what we were doing at Motown. All this, like, all the black companies, Philadelphia International, the Beyond Huff and Kenny Gamble. You know, those guys, they came to Motown, and Motown rejected them, if you can believe that.
Wow.
You know, so they started their own company through Epic Records, which was a division of Columbia Records at the time, and the rest is history. Those guys have recorded some of the greatest music of all time. You know, so that's how much respect we got for Gamble and Huff. But the Stax record, you know, which is from the South, all of these black record companies kind of patted themselves behind Motown because we were the first black company to get that big, you know, and as a result, we influenced a lot of people, not only musicians and artists, but record companies as well.
Weren't the Mazzell brothers involved with songwriting with Motown at one time before they went on to Blue Note? The Mazzell brothers, Larry and Fonz Mazzell.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, before they went on to Blue Note Records.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, they produced a couple of records on the Miracles.
Cool.
They produced a couple of records on the Miracles, along with Freddie Perren, who is a producer that they worked with back in those days. You know, they recorded a couple of records on us, so I know them. Yeah.
Okay. And Bobby Taylor was also another writer for Motown.
Bobby
right?
Taylor was with the Vancouver's, a group that came over from Canada, and Bobby was the lead singer for them. And they had a hit called Does Your Mama Know About Me?
Yep.
You know, it was one of the big hits of Bobby with Bobby Taylor and the Vancouver's.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Bobby was a very, very talented guy, man. Very, very talented guy.
Well, tell me this. Now, the Miracles went on from, like, I think Smokey left the group in 72.
Correct.
And the group continued on with Billy Griffin until about 1978.
Exactly.
And in 2007, you founded a Las Vegas-based entertainment firm, WBMM Enterprises. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay. When I stopped traveling and singing on the road, okay, in during that time, okay. I was on the road for 20 straight years, man. I got tired of living out of hotels and suitcases and all that stuff, you know. So I kind of left the group, and I started being more active behind the scenes as opposed to being on stage and singing and things of that nature. But, you know, so I formed WDMM. Because I continued to write for other artists in the business, and, you know, so I was still active. I just wasn't singing anymore. So that's when I formed the company, WWDM. And, you know, Billy Griffin and I wrote a song called Love Machine, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was the biggest song the Miracles ever had. When that song came out, that song was one of the songs that started the genre. Disco, and that's why the song ended up being so big, you know, because it was one of the songs. I would say the premier song that really started disco in America, and that song just exploded, and that was the biggest song the Miracles ever recorded, you know. And you know, we had recorded some of the greatest songs in history before the machine, obviously. Ooh, baby, baby, going to a go-go, Mickey's Monkey, which was a real big hit for us.
Yeah, that was my
favorite. Love Machine was bigger than all of those songs, you know, and as a result, we got a call, and I got a call from a toy company, okay, that wanted to put Love Machines in Animal, okay, and that's one of the reasons why I formed WWBM, and, you know, because we wrote the song. At the time, the song was administered by EMI Publishing, which is the biggest entertainment publishing company in the world. And so they called up EMI, and me and Billy went into the studio, and we did the chip that goes inside the toy. So we made a hell of a deal with the toy company, and the toy did very, very good. It was in all the major retail outlets, Montgomery Ward's, and all the major retail outlets in the toy division. And that is what gave me the idea to form the company. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make a deal with another toy company and keep that part of Love Machine going, you know, appearing in toys. And you know, you push, it was a hell of a design. You know, you push the index finger of the toy start dancing, and start singing Love Machine, you know, and it was an array of animals. It was two monkeys on a motorcycle, a hippopotamus, who I think is real cute. You know, there was different animals singing Love Machine. And, you know, so that kind of inspired me to get involved in the toy part of my career. And so that's why I formed WBMM.
Well, is this also a way of just protecting the intellectual properties of, you know, that were produced by the Miracles and you and what have you?
Say that again, Barry.
Is that a way of also just basically protecting the intellectual properties that, you know, that you and the Miracles have produced and Billy Griffin?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess if I can understand your question.
You know, anytime anybody uses anything that, you know, from any of the music that you wrote with the Miracles or for other acts, this is a way of protecting that, you know, your publishing rights to that, and when it's
absolutely
used other ways.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I formed my publishing company, you know, in 1971, okay? And all the songs that I had written up to that point, okay, I did not receive any publishing business. None of us did, you know. Smokey Robinson, Norman Whitfield, I'm sure you know who he is, you know, Holland Ocean, Holland, myself, all the we writers at one time, we wasn't receiving any publishing orders until later on. And the reason for that is when I mentioned the first time we went over into England, when at a point where we really wasn't that well known, Barry Gordy, the founder of Motown, wanted to establish a publishing deal with EMI, you know, which is the biggest publishing company in the world. So, you know, he came to us and said, look, you know, but see, we were turned down. Barry and his older sister went to all the record companies in England at that time, and none of them really wanted to. They wasn't really too impressed with us, you know. And then there's a singer called Dusty Springfield, and I'm sure you know who she is.
Yep.
She She was with a big star back then. And she befriended us because she loved Motown music. And when Dusty got involved, and we started going around, and Barry started going around talking to the other company, and now we got the support of Dusty plus the support of other famous English artists. And that's when the political machine in England began to notice who we were. And all the people that Barry went to try to make a publishing deal for his catalog turned him down. But when he went to EMI, EMI said, look, I think this company has a lot of potential. And this is right when we started burning the charts up, so to speak. Okay, the Temptations got hot. The Girls got hot. Diamond and the Girls had 6 number one records in a row. At that time, it broke the Beatles record.
Ouch.
You know, so there was an operator that was looking at a Billboard magazine from EMI, and he said, wow, look at this black company, what they're doing. We had 7 records over the charts, Marvin Gaye, Temptations, and so forth. You know, so EMI called Miss Gordy up and said, look, I love your company. Let's make a deal. Okay, so Barry made a deal with Joe Bett, which is Motown's publishing affiliate at the time. Still is Motown's publishing affiliate. It became the third biggest publishing company in the world as a result of Barry making this deal with EMI, you know. And initially, when he made the deal, he told us, he said, look, guys, us writers, he said, I can't give you no publisher money right now because of the deal that I'm making with EMI. And that was the reason that we writers at Motown didn't get publishing residuals at that time.
Hey, so tell me this. What are you, what kind of projects are you and WBMM and Billy Griffin, what do you all do these days?
Well, I'll tell you the toy thing. Is my primary project, you know, and I'm still writing songs for artists in the business, you know, but like I said, I'm kind of like behind the scenes. I don't travel anymore. But Smokey is still traveling. Smokey is still working after all these years.
Yeah.
He's still working. You know, Billy went and started his solo career as well, okay? So Billy is doing well. Smokey is doing extremely well. You know, I'm like I said, I'm kind of working behind the scenes at this point, writing music for artists in the industry, things of that nature. You know, I'm going to get ready to do a thing with David Foster. I'm sure you know who he is. You know, as a matter of fact, I got David into the business, you know. David is originally from Canada. You know, he came over to America and he lived in a city called North Hollywood, trying to get established. You know, at that point, I was a producer of The Miracles, and I was looking for a person to handle my rhythm charge for me. And my engineer said, well, this is a guy, his name is David Foster. Why don't you give David a call? So I called David. I went by his house, and I was really impressed with him. And I hired David to do the rhythm charge for this album I was producing on the Miracles at the time. And when David worked for me, the word got around. This young guy from Canada, man. You know, he was working with Pete Moore, man. Man, you ought to hear this stuff, you know. So as a result, everybody started using Dave. You know, that kind of got him into the business. Quincy started using George Duke and all the prominent producers back in those days started using. And he exploded as a studio musician. And then from there, he told me, I was over at David's house one day, and he said, Pete, you know, I'm going to be one of the biggest producers ever. Well, was he right? Oh, my God. You look at David Foster now, my David is up there with Quincy.
Yeah.
You know, and he did the original music for Dreamgirls, the Broadway play.
Okay? Right.
And when David done that, his career just exploded, man, you know. And then, of course, you know, he started working with Barbra Streisand and Whitney. You know, he did The Bodyguard, you know, which is the biggest selling movie soundtrack in history. Okay, and he's done I Will Always Love You, a song written by Dolly Parton, which is the biggest single in history. And from that point, David Foster is just, he's incredible. I'm really proud of him.
Well, I tell you what, Pete, you've given us a lot of history. You practically described the soundtrack of the This Kansas City Kid here. And you practically described the soundtrack of This Kansas City Child.
Oh, yeah.
And because all of that time that you talked about was time that I was growing up and getting interested in music and actively involved. So,
but I want to tell you something, baby. When I listen to The Bodyguard, man, that album takes my breath away. Man, what a great album that is. And it's just such a great album, you know. And David obviously done an impeccable job on the music. And Whitney, man, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, God rest her soul. But every time I hear Whitney sing, man, I see the face of God. Boy, what a voice that woman had.
Yes.
And I'm proud of the fact that I got David into the business. As a matter of fact, I talked to David last week. We might do another project together. You know, I've written a couple of songs, and I want David to be the producer. And I wrote a couple of songs for an artist that he produced in the past. So that's one of the things I'm working on as well with WB MM Enterprise.
Well, I tell you what, I thank you very much for taking the time out to speak with me and my listeners. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, continued success for you and WBMM and Billy Griffin and the Motown family. You know, I just thank you for so many years of great music and entertaining us and, you know, if nothing, getting us through whatever it is we deal with on a regular basis.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure talking to you. I don't normally have a chance to talk about the old days of Motown and that type of thing, you know. So it was a pleasure talking to you as well. And, you know, before I leave, I would like to say God bless you. God bless your listeners as well. Okay. And you take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.